Good evening, everyone. My name is Kaku, and I'm very happy to see everyone here this evening. And I'm very happy to be here because I have been away from our most intense activities for quite some time. So this evening, I want to deal with one of the sections out of the Hidden Lamp that we're reading for Ango. This one is called Ziyong's Ship of Compassion. And the reflection was written by Daijaku Judith Kinst. It goes like this. A scholar traveled a long distance to meet with Master Ziyong Shengru. He entered the hall, and he and Ziyong looked at each other. Then the scholar said, "I've come to visit this ship of compassion." But who would have guessed that the ship of compassion would turn out to be nothing but an old crone? Ziyong gave an earth-shaking roar. "What is this place? Tell me, is it male or is it female?" When the scholar couldn't reply, she said to him, "Come closer and I'll tell you." When the scholar was right in front of her, she grabbed him and said, "From the day you left Spirit Mountain, there has been no place to seek. From this day on, mother and son are reunited." The scholar said, "I trust you completely," and bowing to Ziyong, requested ordination from her. Any questions? Another one of these wonderful old stories. So, the scholar comes and calls her an old crone. I mean, he traveled a long way and presumably went through a great deal of trouble to get there because he heard that this ship of compassion was really great and was very impressive. So he wanted a taste of just what her compassion was like. So he calls her an old crone as a way of sort of testing her mettle. It's wanting to find out whether this ship of compassion is genuine, or is it a bunch of baloney? Is it something somebody thought of and, you know, blithely just said, "Well, you know, she's such a great ship of compassion"? Or is it more? Is there something real there? So, in other words, it starts out by asking us, what are we looking for in Zen practice? Why are you here? I think I ask that just about every time I come and give a talk. Why are you here? Are you here looking for approval of yourself as you are? Well, we talk about that, don't we? Just as you are is perfect, complete, lacking nothing. That's one side. On the other side, what's your other side? People come looking for many different things. What are you looking for? What kind of spark do you need to turn you into a burning fire? In this case, the scholar, I mean, the person's identified as a scholar and not given any name. So we must understand that this person is invested in his identity as a scholar. That's what he wants to be known for. So he comes, though, coming to Zen practice, as we do, asking for something more. Something's missing. Something's not quite right. Something else needs fixing or shifting or being awoken within him. We come into the Zendo having some kind of identity. It may be about our sexual identity. It may be about our racial identity. It may be about our religious identity or vocation, or that we're married or we're divorced or we're not married. We come looking for identity in many different forms, and the forms may change throughout our life, but the quest for answering the question of who are you goes on, seems like a long, long time. Is it ever really resolved? And what a good teacher does is raise before us anything that looks like something that we're clinging to, something that we want perhaps affirmation for, or, you know, we're out to get the cookies that mommy baked. In this case, the scholar simply presses his case by calling her an old crone. What we're looking for above all is what Dogen said. What strength can we rely on to rub pieces of ice together and make fire? What strength can we rely on to rub pieces of ice together and make fire? Last Monday night, I went to see The Revenant, and there was ice rubbed together to make fire in that movie, let me tell you. I'll say more about that a little bit later. But the point is that we come in asking in some way to be lit up ourselves, asking to be made alive or to touch into the core of our own vitality so that we have more sense of presence and power in our lives and intentionality. What strength can we rely on when we encounter what is most true about ourselves and all beings? You know, we sit on these cushions, and what happens? Our whole life goes before us. Sometimes there's an emphasis on, you know, X, and sometimes there's an emphasis on Y. But it's all parts of our lives, and it all just comes rushing forward. And sometimes it can be overwhelming simply watching or listening or hearing or in our mind's eye seeing the many different things that are part of our lives. We have this saying, you know, in Zen practice, practice as if to extinguish the fire that's on the top of your head. Practice to extinguish the fire on top of your head. Do you have a fire on top of your head? Or maybe yours is in your belly. Or maybe it's in the leg, or, you know, I don't know where yours is. Sometimes mine's in my hands, but most of all it goes into my shoulders. But what can we rely on when we encounter what is most true about ourselves? What does what is most true mean? What is most true about you? What's the core of who you are? We get these Dharma names, you know, and these Dharma names are supposed to point to something real and something true about us. Is that true for you? As Roshi identified something about you that is really central to who you are, to your core. When we find out what is most true of us, we may not like what we see. Because the fact is, what is most true is not just one thing, but what is most true is many things, because we are many-sided people. We have ups, downs, squares, triangles, circles, rough edges, clean edges. What is most true? Sitting on the cushion, we begin to find out. Sometimes we need help sorting through what we find. And a good eye helps us to discern what's true about us and what is not. What's true and real and what is accidental. So the old crone gives an earth-shaking roar to Zijiang. And that roar is in our own bones. We have that roar inside us. We have it within us to make an earth-shaking roar. We may not think so. Part of our problem is we don't really believe in it. And so we often sit in silence rather than speak up. Our deepest wisdom asks us moment by moment, what is this place? So, you know, he went to her temple, and so she says, well, what is this place? Is it female or is it male? That kind of stumped him. He didn't know how to answer that. How would you answer? Is this Zendo male or female? You look around and the sparseness would suggest it's more male than female. But there are some other mitigating factors, some other parts to the Zendo, thank goodness. But this question can be asked about any place where we are. What is this place if it's our home, our apartment? What if it is this Zendo to which you have come this evening? What if it's your workspace at work? What is this place if it's Auschwitz? What is this place if it's Syria or Israel or Germany? How do you answer, what is this place? What is this place for you? What is your home for you? Tell me, the author says, with your posture and your breath of your body in Zazen, tell me with kind words to your neighbor. Tell me with the dignity you give to all that you meet. Tell me with your ability to face honestly the life you live without pretense or the need for position or identity. There is a life for us. A life lived without pretense or need for position or identity. Does that position involve how much money we make, how much money we spend, what we spend it on, what we don't spend it on? We tell people who we are by the way we walk, by the way we talk. You know, it's a very interesting exercise to listen to a conversation when you don't know the language. And to hear, you know, inflections and the rise and fall of tones, and to hear the changes of hardness or softness, the changes of a kind of biting speech or a kind of lulling speech. It's very interesting because actually you are experiencing an emotional aspect from the person that may not easily be seen if you're listening to the words rather than to the tone of the voice. We relate to others more by the tone than by the language that we use. As some of you know, I recently acquired a new dog. And the first thing that I'm told by my dog trainer is, your dog doesn't speak English. Well, of course not, I say to myself. On the other hand, you know, when I say no in a certain tone of voice, he gets it. When I say yes, he gets that too. So I don't know, you know, He's French, so maybe he doesn't understand English, but he's getting there. So I've, as many of you know, because you were there, I missed summer ongo at the Grail, and then I wound up missing winter session at Garrison. And the first one I missed because I was doing radiation and chemotherapy. But the second one I missed because I had just gotten this dog. And I was told that, you know, you're forming a bond with this dog, and this is a very vulnerable time for you to be away from this dog that you just, you know, brought into your life. So, you know, what I never did for my daughters or for my friends or for my partners, I did for this dog. I stayed home from, you know, from winter session. And I'm getting a lot of ribbing from it from family and friends who know that, you know, I would not have gone to, you know, a vacation with them to Key West, but I will stay home for the dog. So it's been a very, what I will call interesting experience, missing out on the key intensives of my life in terms of Zen practice. I haven't missed either one of those for several years, and I've found it extremely disorienting, and I feel very lost and sometimes lonely. I miss all of you. So that's another reason why I'm very glad to be here tonight, is to reconnect. And there's a sense in which I feel the rug has been pulled out from under me. You know, this is a phrase that Daido used more than Roshi does, but, you know, that's part of Zen practice, supposedly. You know, students are, you know, trying to be sincere and make the right effort and so forth. And the teacher's job sometimes is to pull the rug out from under them. Well, that's how I feel, you know, about having missed these things. And it was not because of the teacher. But it's interesting to see how I'm feeling all of these, you know, negative things, all these, you know, I mean, disoriented. Yeah, I feel lost. And what this brought me back to is I did two things fairly recently. One was getting the dog, but before I got the dog, I moved. And I moved from Astoria to Long Island to Huntington. And why did I do that? Well, in my struggle with cancer and going through the chemo and radiation treatment, I had this inner image of wanting a dog again. I've usually had a dog in my life, you know, since I was a kid, and I desperately wanted a dog back in my life, And I also had this image of wanting to be among tall trees. I mean, not the puny ones that are in Central Park, but, you know, the big ones. More, you know, tall pine trees and things like that, spruce. And so I'm in a place that has a bunch of tall trees around it. And now I have my dog. So I have made happen this thing that occurred to me as a overpowering wish or urge, and I realized that this urge goes back to when I was 6 years old, and my family lived in the country, southern Illinois, in a very rural area. And it was a time in my life when I was in first grade. And my mother, my father lived there, and my brother who was only 1 year old, who had cerebral palsy when he was born. And so a lot of things were happening for me during that year. And one of the things that happened is I came home from school one day, and my mother was crying, and she hollered at me and said, you know, get out of the house. And she'd never said anything like that before. So I burst into tears, and I called my dog, Old Bill, and I said, you know, let's go. And we went into the woods. So I have recreated a six-year-old scene in my life of, you know, having a dog in the woods. And I have to say, this dog has really touches me very deeply. And I feel a certain wholeness that I wasn't feeling before. And being amid more trees is also very helpful. And at the same time, I never counted the cost of what it would take in terms of less time available for Zen practice, for the Sangha, and how far it takes to get from here to home. So I'm paying a price for all of that. And I was happy to come and speak tonight, because when we're asked to give a talk, it sort of stimulates our own process of looking closely at some aspect of our practice. And so, you know, whatever I am saying is about my own work that I'm, you know, doing with myself. And so as it relates to the koan, being out in the hinterlands, what it feels like, is about an identity shift, or an identity loss, I'm not sure which. So I feel, you know, in the same way that the scholar was sort of testing the ship of compassion, you know, I feel myself tested, and, as I said, disoriented and lost without these anchors that come from practice. So I wouldn't recommend, you know, intentionally skipping, you know, these intensive periods of practice. I find it very costly, emotionally, mentally, intellectually, personally. But at the same time, it does something. You know, it means that a source of great support and love that I experienced here, all of a sudden I'm not in the groove. I'm not with you all, and that's not a happy thing. So it's just a fact of life for right now, and I look at what I did as actually, in retrospect, I realized that I had my version of a panic attack. And, you know, as I've been dealing with the cancer, I've not really experienced being afraid. I think my denial is pretty good. And I'm also getting support from my doctors, but I think this action that I took was related to a fear that I didn't recognize as fear. All I recognized is, this is what I want, and I want it before I die. So I have it. and life is continuing to change. So we have to be open to what's new, to what's unexpected, perhaps unplanned, and to the costs of whatever decision we make. Every decision has a cost to it. So how are we doing with ours and with what it means? So what keeps us from allowing Zijong's roar to express itself through ourselves in all of our actions? What keeps us from allowing Zijong's roar to express itself through us in all our actions? It's right there. It's on the very tip. It's right here in this ordinary moment. A Thursday night, we're sitting in the Zendo. It's right here. The roar is right within us. Yes! It's here. How do I embody the courage of the scholar and the vigor of Zijong? How do I step closer, risk it all, become intimate with this life? So I've just created a something else in my life, and it should be interesting. But this is truly trusting. Trust that which sings in our bones, that which carries us day by day. This is what makes our ordinary fierce way the way of enlightenment. Nothing special, nothing extra, nothing perfect. So I made reference to seeing the movie The Revenant. I don't want to spoil the story for you, but just to say that I found it a very powerful movie, and I loved it. Not in the sense that I was so, you know, dancing on the street as I left, but it's more like a wow. That's what it is. And it speaks to my issues that I'm describing, dealing with being disoriented. So they had a bear in the movie, but they didn't have any dogs. So, you know, I don't know. We can't have everything. But the point is that whatever our life brings to us, can we approach it with curiosity and approach it with the energy that is our own desire for the fullest life possible? Like the scholar, we must leave behind the constricted understanding. It may be useful, but it's limited. We pluck up our courage and enter the Zendo, willing to be grabbed, handed, hauled closer to that from which we often flee. We come here as much to run away from something as we do to face something. And hopefully the facing wins out between the tug. From the day we set out on our journey, there has been no place to seek. Student and teacher have never been separate, never. Will you allow yourself to be united with that which has never been separate? With this very person in front of you, this task, this breath, this earth that cries out for our care, how will you respond?